Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by Healthcare Now Radio, part of the Media Answers Network, and is sponsored by the law offices of Myrick O'Connell. Now here's your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Eric Sullivan, SVP of Innovation and Data Strategies at Inovalon, and also a returning guest. So, Eric, welcome back to Healthcare Du Jour.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me. It's looking forward to the conversation today.
So before we really get going, since it's been a couple of years since you were last on, if you don't mind, why don't you give everyone a little bit of a refresher in terms of who you are and what you do?
Yeah. So I lead the innovation and data strategies arm of Inovalon. You know, and it, the organization is a very large analytic and data company in the healthcare space, with a lot of different clients. You know, think about health plans and provider groups, provider systems, pharma, life sciences, and so my role really is working across the enterprise to get alignment on the data strategies to kind of ensure that we're maximizing all the data assets and think about new technologies and products that can benefit our customers using that data. So think of, you know, AI solutions, interoperability between EHRs, some of the newer Firebase concepts. Those are a lot of the things that I get involved in with a lot of other experts across the enterprise.
So kind of thinking about that broad swath of data that you were just referencing, I think the last time we'd been talking about artificial intelligence. So since that time, you know, has your kind of attention shifted, or kind of what data sets are you really looking at?
So our data sets have definitely grown. I mean, we're, you know, I think we are just continue to grow. I think our data sets are now, you know, well over 300 million lives and, you know, 55 or so billion healthcare events. So think of, you know, pharmacy, lab results, all kinds of medical events for a large part of the United States population. So that those core data sets continue to grow, but we've certainly expanded into getting, you know, data directly from provider systems where we, you know, through our Ability customer base, acquiring more data assets around things like social determinants of health. But that's obviously a huge focus for our customers, whether it's provider or really all the provider, pharmacy, health plans, is to understand those kind of limitations or barriers or challenges that populations have that are, that you can't just see within looking at a typical medical event, right? So expanding into those places, looking at other, you know, remote data. So think of wearables, the consumer reported information is, you know, starting to take more shape. And then also looking at different partnerships where we have risk models, like, you know, we have a great partnership with Johns Hopkins and leverage their ACG, you know, kind of population health risk model. So it's both analytically calculated data assets that we're expanding on, but then kind of building out a deeper and deeper patient profile of, you know, call it, you know, more than 300 million Americans.
And that deeper kind of individual profile is something that is really interesting. And I know you mentioned social determinant data as well as, you know, patient reported data or consumer generated data. So I'd be interested to get your thoughts on in terms of how thinking more about that patient generated aspect has been kind of growing and hopefully refining.
Yeah, and you know, certainly consumer data, consumer generated data, or just consumer generated healthcare data, as I think one of the common acronyms now are becoming more common, continues to grow. It's always been there. It's just now more accessible. So when you look at data like purchasing information or social media interactions, you know, where have you searched online, or, and then of course more of the traditional data such as wearable information, diabetes monitoring, and even consumer reported information. So different than some of the traditional consumer reported or patient reported information that would be kind of harnessed by a provider, but, you know, consumers that are tracking their own weights at home, they're tracking their own vitals and maybe reporting that, or just tracking that within their own log, that information is now becoming much more digitized, and depending on where it's shared and the underlying use cases, it becomes available. And I think what we're seeing is, frankly, as the data becomes more available, you know, it's now all about the use case and all about the rights to it. And a lot of times the data is completely de-identified, which has a tremendous amount of value to understand populations. In other cases, it could be identifiable.
So thinking about the use cases, what are some of the better use cases that are out there?
I think that there's they kind of cross all areas of how at least how Inovalon looks at the industry and kind of the ecosystem in healthcare. The data certainly is tied into treatment. I mean, it's probably the most basic of and probably most important areas is a physician that is treating a patient. If they knew what that patient's truly knew what that patient's diabetes, you know, hemoglobin A1C, blood sugar was, you know, for the last 10 days, you know, that's going to really help them understand the go-forward approach for treating that chronic condition. Information is not going to be readily available to the physician. It's going to be, you know, my mom is diabetic. She brings in a log. She's been handwriting. That's consumer-generated data. That's that's actually very valuable. So I think the use cases around maximizing that patient profile, kind of completing that profile, if you will, to inform treatment is key. But certainly, even just knowing how to intervene, and that, like going back to our discussion on social determinants of health, and understanding if so, you know, you're looking at a population of all things being equal, say on their chronic condition, that's here's 1,000 diabetes patients with the same you know, scores around blood sugar and other clinical variables. Then you start looking at, well, how do they compare, and how are they variable around things such as education, access to food, to healthy food, you know, economics. You know, those are the next layer that actually are often much more important. So when you think about how this data can be used in use cases, I think, yes, ensuring treatment is maximized at the point of care, but just knowing how to intervene, you know, when to get on the phone with someone to check in on them, you know, when to go to their house versus maybe need to use telehealth, which is obviously right now is a really important part of what Inovalon's doing in a lot of the industry is leveraging the tele and, you know, health capabilities because of COVID-19. So I think the short answer is there's a lot of use cases, but and it really goes from identification, engagement, all the way to treatment and beyond.
So given the importance, are there any concerns around the reliability or the accuracy of the data that's being generated?
I think there's concerns of reliability and accuracy in every piece of data that we touch, right? So whether you're looking at health claims, I mean, we know there's enough issues in health claims data from accuracy, you know, that can just take one, you know, fumbling of a digit to change a lab result from 18 to 180, right? So there is a tremendous amount of error that can exist and reliability related to that in both traditional healthcare, health claims information. And certainly this also then persists in a world where the consumer is generating that information. Was there, you know, did the fact that there wasn't a blood pressure value mean that they are deceased, or is it they had their monitor turned off, right? I mean, there's a lot of things that it's probably an obvious example, but there's plenty of times where the reliability has to be ascertained. And that brings in the importance of leveraging, you know, machine learning models. One of the areas that my team puts a lot of focus on, and I'm sure is true for many similar folks in the industry, is building up this front end kind of QA. And in some cases, we're leveraging machine learning to say, does this really make sense? I mean, looking at this type of patient, seeing this trend of data, you know, where are the outliers, knowing when to, you know, kind of almost Windsorize the data on both ends because it's just noise, to focus in on what really is, you know, which makes sense or is values that would be pass the sniff test. So leveraging machine learning and capabilities like that will help get us through this hurdle of reliability.
Yeah, and I think those are all very fair points, especially the one you raised of, you know, reliability is always a concern no matter where you're concerning the data coming from, since right. If you had people handwriting it, there could always be, as you said, an error in transposing it. But actually, kind of maybe to refine the question a little bit, you know, one aspect that I was thinking about is, you know, you mentioned wearables. So, you know, mm-hmm. Is there a concern that maybe the wearable isn't as accurate as, say, like an FDA-approved medical device that could be doing the same thing in a physician's office?
You know, I haven't frankly seen any evidence to show. I mean, one would think that, you know, going to a physician's office and having your blood pressure checked there just innately may have more higher accuracy, perhaps. It makes sense, perhaps, that would be more accurate than if you were home. I don't know. But I don't know if that's really true versus just us getting comfortable with the fact that consumers have more control over their own healthcare. And my watch may be just as accurate in tracking, may or may not be, tracking my blood pressure, you know, right now, or my heart rate, which is a little elevated, versus, you know, a provider providing me an FDA cup machine that's doing the same thing. In the end, are they really that different? I don't know if I've seen evidence that with the advances of technologies between the Fitbit type technologies that are out there and others, how much they really differ from an FDA device. I'm sure there's differences, but I imagine that Delta is getting smaller and smaller as technologies keep getting better and consumers are getting a little more aware and smarter with how they look at their own health.
Yeah, and I think that distinction is actually really important to highlight, since, you know, I would always recall, you know, especially a few years ago, you know, maybe three or four, as wearables were starting to become more prevalent, that, you know, one of the knocks, or the commonly stated knocks, whether or not it was accurate, was that the readings weren't going to be the same, and that maybe it wasn't validated. But, you know, kind of expanding off of your point, I feel like I saw a suggestion recently that, you know, to your point of, yeah, maybe the tool might be more refined for like blood pressure in a physician's office. If you're getting more regular readings by a patient or an individual doing it at home with, you know, some type of approved device, you might actually end up with better data, because, you know, there was always that anecdotal, you know, white coat blood pressure syndrome of, you know, you're in the physician's office and it's going to go up just because you're nervous. But if you're doing it at home all the time, you're going to have more useful data and more consistent data.
Right. No, yeah. Your physician's office is on the second floor and you just walked up a flight of stairs and check your blood pressure. Well, you know, it's a little higher. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, I haven't seen anything compelling recently that says that the consumer reported remote device data is inherently just terrible, right? Is it flawed? Of course, but to your point, so is data across the board. So knowing when it could be, knowing how to detect that flaw and kind of dealing with it, I think is going to be the bigger challenge of all of us.
Yeah, and then that also kind of rounds back into the other point that you're raising, which is, you know, having tools that can sort through all the volumes of data that are coming in and being generated, and being able to help filter out some of the noise, so that way you can figure out, okay, what seems to be just, you know, an abnormal reading that you can figure out why it happened that way, or when something might actually require a trigger and a follow-up.
Yep, absolutely.
I know we've just been talking a lot about bringing in a lot of different data. And also, for those of you just joining, I'm talking with Eric Sullivan from Inovalon. And we've been talking about consumer or patient reported data and the tremendous amount of value that can be derived from it. But I guess the next step is, you know, how can healthcare organizations collect and then refine that data? Because, you know, another kind of common storyline that you hear, that you'll end up hearing around it, is you can't just flood a physician with all this data. You actually need to give something that's actionable.
Yeah. It's there is a point of just too much, right? Just too much information. It's not relevant as much to just flood a physician or for any of us, right? I mean, we all try to distill in our own private lives, you know, bombardments of information, and just we try to hone in on things that are just more salient and that makes sense. And physicians are the same. They're all human, and so they're trying to take in and filter out what is they see as noise, and that becomes a bigger challenge. The more and more information that a physician is getting, or a care manager, or, you know, pharmacist, if it's not relevant, and certainly if it starts conflicting with other information in front of that provider, it really becomes a challenge, and you actually can go the wrong direction. So I think that you're right, and that's where this, you know, even when you look at interoperability models today, if I can jump into that a little bit, which is this conundrum of you know, CMS and HHS kind of driving health plans to share data with consumers and with providers, and then providers all have their own information in their electronic health record, And there's this concept of provenance and knowing where the information is coming from. But you're flooding the EHR with information from multiple points now from payers, from providers, from other providers, from the consumer, frankly. And I think the challenge is going to be reconciling that. And that's where the heavy lifting is going to be. It goes back to our comment on just weeding out the noise. It's a similar concept, which is how do you take it, kind of organize it, normalize it, the information first of all, so it's all apples to apples in terms of what it's describing, whether it's your weight or the medications you're taking, and then kind of tell a story, timeline it, but then you have duplications, you have conflicting values, and that is where I think a lot of the technology is going to be focusing on is reconciling multiple points of data and making sure that you're telling the right story, because a physician is not going to have time. And what will happen is when they get a conflicting data points, they're going to close it all down and just go off their gut, because they're trained physicians and that they will tune out information if it starts creating more work for them that seems useless. So that's definitely where the focus will be. Interoperability is a phenomenal advancement between EHRs and payers and providers and EHRs and consumers, but it becomes even more critical that ability to reconcile and clarify what's relevant is going to be the focus.
In thinking about that reconciliation process, can you provide maybe a little bit more insight into how you think it might actually be developed and implemented? Because I agree with you, the mere fact of interoperability, yes, that is going to be great. But as you said, you have to figure out how to mesh those various data points together so it creates a cohesive story.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be multidimensional, right? So in that part of it's going to be an analytic exercise of, depending on the use case, just weeding out categories of data that just have low reliability, which kind of ties into our earlier discussion. But then when you have data that's all within the same kind of bucket of insight, it's going to be, the models will need to start sifting through it, organizing it, deduplicating it, and then, kind of structuring it in a way that tells a story. And on top of that, so it's the same time. So picture a person who has, I guess I'll go back to the diabetic, which is just a common use case. You have five different blood sugars coming in, from two that are reported from the consumer, one that the provider got from the LabCorp, and two others that came from the health plan from another unknown source or hospital. Taking those in, normalizing it at the EHR level, for example, or it could be in a consumer device, could be a Fitbit type device, or that's going to take that. It's going to have to filter through that, timeline it, or make sure it's normalized so it's all telling the same data. This is all at the same decimal point, if you will, and the same type of data. But then you need to apply. You'll have to apply, and we do this at Inovalon quite a bit. Is when we have a whole bunch of data together and it's telling a story, running a machine learning type model on top of that. That says for this type of patient, does that story make sense? And if there's in knowing how to then weed out information, I think it's going to get to a point. It's going to continue to get exacerbated with this flood of data, to have those type of technologies to say what is the right story we're telling here, and if it's not accurate, and again, machine learning models can be wrong as well, right? Bad data in can train the model incorrectly, so. That doesn't solve everything. It just will help you understand where the data you're getting that may be cultivated and organized may still be wrong. And so that's going to be critical, is to understand that.
And thinking about it, to some degree, that what you just said of bad data in, and also the ability for anything or anyone to be able to analyze it, how does disparate ways of entering or processing the same type of data play into that? And should that be an argument towards implementing more of a common data set or common means of entering data?
I think that's definitely where, if you look at the latest interoperability rule from CMS, from March 8th or 9th, a lot of focus on trying to standardize healthcare data around different models, right? So from the health plan side, using the CPCDS structure, which was created through Care and Alliance, on the clinical side using USCDI to exchange kind of clinical data elements. So there's definitely the latest rule, which starts kicking in different stages starting next year, gets us further down that line in terms of how and what you're exchanging. The challenge will be, frankly, is even deeper, which is, okay, yes, now we have a standard, and the fifth field in is going to be, you know, date or time or you know, maybe patient's result. What's the field that you're putting in there? How are you mapping to that? So I think that it's the great thing is the latest interoperability rule is establishing more standards around kind of how administrative and health plan data gets exchanged, how clinical data through USCDI and FHIR 4.0 and all the other acronyms we can make up. But at the end of the day, it goes back to what data is actually mapped into that. And that is where the rubber hits the road in terms of getting it right. So yeah, I think it's a mixed story. It's great to have a standard. Will the standards be implemented appropriately? I think that's going to be interesting to find out. I think we know the answer, and the question is who's going to be monitoring that, and how do we find those issues and cure it?
So maybe in an ideal world, you know, how would you like to see that administered and operationalized?
Well, I mean, the underlying challenge is the data stores for almost every health plan, you know, most EHRs are all very different. So knowing, you know, obviously important data, you know, the implementation guides that attempt to tell you what to put in these fields are there, right? So there's definitely enough documentation out there to instruct you what should be put in these fields, but it's going to end up being ultimately likely a human at every one of these health plans, every one of these EHRs that's going to look at that implementation guide. It's hundreds of pages long, and look at their data mart that has thousands of fields and start, you know, creating those linkages. So I think the implementation guides for all the FHIR use cases and the interoperability rule standards are great, and that's an important part of it. But it's still, you know, ironically, or maybe not so ironically, comes down to, will the humans get it right when they read that guide and they attempt to map, you know, all these fields from their own native data structures, which could be any possible form, to a standard, right? It still requires a human interpretation of what that text is saying.
Yeah, and actually, hearing you emphasize that point is something that, I don't believe is necessarily put out there that often. It's, you know, I feel like so much of the time you hear about the promise of technology and all the benefit that can be derived from technology. But, you know, as you just reminded everyone, you always have to remember there's a person behind all of it. You know, there's a person who's probably, you know, or a team of people who are developing the solutions, and as you said, also having to implement the, you know, various requirements. You really can never rely solely upon technology, but it really is a melding of all these different tools and individuals.
Yep, I agree. It is a combination of the two.
You know, I know we've kind of focused a lot on how all these ideas and solutions can help the healthcare system, but do you see any of these solutions or the availability of data going outwards to individuals as well? Because I know you're referencing the new rules that have come out, and obviously another, on top of the interoperability, a big drive of that is to increase and enhance individual access to their own data.
Yeah. I mean, it's really an exciting time. I think many of us I've been in healthcare for over three decades now. But, you know, to think that in theory this is what is coming forward is this much more fluidity, you know, high fluidity of data where the consumer actually can see their information. I mean, I think I saw this on with folks. I think it was, it was someone high up in the president's cabinet who was at the hospital, and just to get their own medical records, they still had to, you know, go to them. It was a monstrous process. It involved faxing information. And so this promise of the consumer being within an app, within their EHR's portal, or on a handheld app, and be able to just call for their kind of health plan and EHR information, and have it in a standardized form land into a GUI, is very exciting. I do think that it is, you know, the stories that we get as consumers about our own health are often partial or incomplete. You know, you look at your, I mean, it's just probably a bad example, but, you know, my weight, you know, I step on a scale, it goes to it's a Bluetooth scale, it goes to my phone, I see, oh, I've lost a couple of pounds. That's the only part of the story. It doesn't say that, yeah, and by the way, your stress level has gone up and you haven't eaten right. And so, you know, the partial stories are interesting, but when the consumers can now start weaving what they're collecting on their own through their scales and through, you know, their counting their steps and start weaving that into their underlying chronic conditions that they mostly don't have, they know it intuitively, oh yeah, I have diabetes or I have this and that. But having their clinical history come into those environments, those applications, and then start telling a much more comprehensive story, say, hey, you know, hey, Matt, you know, with your background, you know, your height, your family history, I see your weight is this and your value is that, and you've had 3 glasses of water, maybe you should do A, B, and C. It becomes a totally different experience for all of us when, although it can get a little scary, but when those devices we have around us actually know a lot about us and it can actually tell us more complete story. I mean, it is probably a little, you know, scary if you're in your kitchen and your Alexa starts telling you, hey, I just saw that you just did this and, you know, your dad did that and it didn't work out well. I mean, it can go too far probably, but I do think that combining the clinical, having access for consumers with their own, as we started this call, with their own reported and collected information, wow, the power is just incredible. And layer on some intelligence like machine, you know, layer some AI on top of it to know what to do with that. It will be just a really interesting experience for all of us.
You know, that's a very intriguing picture that you just painted. And it's, you know, it certainly sounds, you know, based on what we were talking about, that we're taking incremental steps towards getting there. And it's, you know, to some degree, having to allow for the time to develop. But believe it or not, we're already almost at the end of our time. So, you know, you kind of mentioned it, you know, the COVID pandemic has had a fundamental and kind of foundational change to the healthcare industry. But I'm kind of, you know, I'd like to get your perspective in terms of, you know, what do you think, either positive or negative, has been the impact of the pandemic and what are either going to be temporary or, you know, to some degree, hopefully permanent changes to the system? You know, kind of what's the impact of that been on the perceived value of patient-reported data?
Yeah, I think that I see a couple of big things that have occurred. Obviously, I mean, even beyond patient-reported information, the, you know, obviously the explosion of telehealth, the recognition that what we've all seen and you know, growing up as everybody on little monitors talking to each other, and it actually really does have a real application in these circumstances, and I think will persist with a high usage beyond this moment in time. So, we layer into that the use of, and I've seen a lot of great examples. I think we're launching a dashboard as well that intersects kind of the COVID high-risk patients with those that had different social determinants of health indicators. So that use of that data, this consumer-generated information that can feed into social determinants, that, you know, I think we're all starting to get a little smarter with, you know, these patients are not all the same. Everyone's risk is not all the same on paper. You got to learn more about them. The telehealth experience opens up a channel to those folks, but then a layering on what do we know about them? What have they reported? Layering telehealth with remote patient monitoring is going to be, I think we'll see that really explode over the coming, you know, months as well. So it's the really innovative information, tying that to the consumer generated, you know, what they're capturing at home, and then opening up a channel like telehealth to really engage with a clinician is going to be there's a lot of power in that that goes far beyond, I think, our current moment in time with COVID-19.
Yeah, no, and I think it'll be a lot to track. But as I said, believe it or not, we're already out of time. I want to thank my guest, Eric Sullivan, for a great conversation and also for being a return guest.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it.
No, thank you. And thank you to everyone listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at #HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.